Kane County PNZ, January 10th, 2024. Okay.
This guy's alive.
You got a pen that I can borrow?
Yep.
I got one.
You got one?
The next one?
My next one, let me take notes.
Yeah.
He needs a pen.
And Commissioner Heaton has another meeting, so we don't have to wait for him to start either.
Oh, Rob should be here, but...
I think they can start.
But we need Jeremy here, because he needs to get sworn in.
Sworn in?
I need to swear at him today.
We'll let Mesa swear at him, and she'll swear him in.
Can we go on to some other items, maybe come back to that?
You can, but do you want him here when you vote in a chairman?
No.
Did you see the looks on the other side?
I'm just asking.
He might get nominated sworn in if he's not here to defend himself.
Well, that happened to Wade a couple of times. He wasn't here, he got nominated.
So. That's the risk you run.
And out, we've had a couple of mayors that got in that way. They
really?
Didn't show up to the meeting? Absolutely.
By the way.
That's how they got the job.
Who's going to do the minutes? Wade's not here. Can we do number four? Can we do the zone change?
It got postponed. They called at 11 o'clock this morning. So
let's do all the stuff except for the swearing in and the chair, and then we'll do those last. We'll be out of here in 10 minutes.
And seriously, where Wade is the ex officio, we could do the zone change if he's not here still. If we can do any of those without him.
We don't. We don't need him. He's got veto power completely.
Yeah.
So, yes, Doug, you could do the minutes and the temporary permit if you wanted to. And I'll get pledge and prayer and all that.
Say that again. Absolutely.
Okay, hold on. Let me turn some microphones on.
Oh, man.
Not
to get live.
Gwen, we do need some pledges. Thank you.
See, where's the flag?
Hey, you guys are live, and like I said, once those mics are on, they're on.
And you're making history first time. PNZ's in our new chambers.
So I've got a button here I can push and turn this off.
No. It doesn't turn off, though. It pops back on. Well, his light stayed off.
Did it turn off? But you've got another one right there that's on. So I tried turning them off earlier, and they wouldn't turn off.
Mine won't turn off.
Yeah. Mine will go off if I hold the button down, but if I release it, it doesn't.
I think we're all...
There's a reason for that.
Yeah, probably. Well, it is 6 o'clock, so let's go ahead and call the meeting to order. We probably should wait for Jeremy if we're going to have elections. But I've asked Commissioner Haycock if he would offer an invocation, and then Commissioner Brown if she would lead us in a Pledge of Allegiance. So let's go to that point.
Our Father, we come before Thee this evening, grateful indeed for the opportunity that we have to serve the community of Kane County, and we ask for Thy divine providence to be upon us and to help us to discern the things that we need to know and be sensitive to the issues at hand and to seek for the greatest good for those who come before this body. And we feel the responsibility that has been vested therein, and we seek to act in accordance with healthy principles, and for that help and assistance we pray in the name of Thy Son Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
Hey, Steph.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Before you start, please use your microphones because they are wired directly into our recorder and directly into the phone lines so people can hear you.
Yes, ma'am.
So please speak into them.
Do we need to get them closer than they are? I can hear myself in the
sound. I was going to say, I can hear myself now.
As long as you can hear yourself through here, we're good. We just got to make sure you're getting picked up.
Actually, item one, I'd kind of like to wait for a moment for Jeremy. He said he'd be a few minutes late. Item two, we probably ought to postpone that a little bit if we want Jeremy to be here, and I think that would be good as long as we know he's coming. Item three is we can delete. Wade is not coming. And
there's Jeremy.
And Jeremy just showed up, so wow, we can do it. I'm gonna quickly go to item number four. Item number four is the approval of the minutes. Would anyone like to float a motion?
I move to approve the minutes.
Second.
December 13, 2023. Mm-hmm.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Hearing no discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? that motion passes. Let's go back now to item number one. Shannon, do you conduct this? Oh, it's going to, okay.
I love being at the delegate.
I got elected to this because a notary can do the swearing in, we learned. So
good. We'll
ask John and Jeremy to please stand. They're being reappointed to our board for a 4-year term. Yes, you agree. If you bring your right arm to the square and please repeat, I state your name.
I, Jeremy Chamberlain.
Do solemnly swear that I will support, obey, and defend.
That I will support, obey, and defend
the Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of Utah.
And the Constitution of the State of Utah.
And that I will discharge the duties.
And that I will discharge the duties
of my office with fidelity.
Of my office with fidelity.
Thank you. And now you get to sign your life away.
4 years.
If you will sign right here.
Be halfway to 100 by then.
Thank you.
If you will sign right here. Appreciate it, and thank you for being willing to serve.
Did you get an enlistment bonus? A re-up bonus?
Okay, this next item on the agenda is the election of a chair and a vice chair for this planning commission. Nominations are open for chairman of the King County Planning Commission. For
this. Mr. Chairman, can I ask a personal discussion on the voting of the chair? I'm not voting with the chair.
I'm sorry.
Can I ask for some discussion on the voting of the chair or not voting of the chair?
Of course.
What
would
that
be? Yeah, it's called a point of personal privilege. What's your question?
In the past, in the councils that I've been on, the chair reserves their vote for a tie. In my opinion, it's a position of privilege and honor and respect. I want to thank you. In my year of being here, I think you do an incredible job of trying to be unbiased and bringing up all the points that need to be made, or that looking at both sides as best you can. And then I love that the chair gets kind of final say, or usually gets final say, and brings up the most important topics. And like I said, I think you've done an incredible job that way. Appreciate you there. My discussion that I'd like to have is whether or not the chair can vote. And I understand in our last meeting, Rob stated that unless it's an ordinance, the chair can choose to vote or not. With some discussion with staff, I've learned that chair can either vote or not vote, but maybe not pick and choose when they vote. So I'd like to know what everybody else thinks, what the council thinks as to whether or not chair should or shouldn't vote, if we want to make it an ordinance to not vote, or if we want to state they vote or they don't. There's no, sometimes they vote, sometimes they don't vote.
I'm going to defer to council.
So there's no prohibition on the chair voting. So the chair is just like any other member. You can vote. You can abstain. just like any other person on the commission. You do have the ability to alter your own rules of procedure. So if you do want to have that in place where, like on a city council, that's typically, like a city council, there's state law that governs that. The mayor can vote, but only to break ties. So if you wanted to have a similar provision, you could put that in your own rules of procedure. But currently, there's nothing that prevents the chair from voting. So if you don't vote, it's because you're abstaining, and you should state that you're abstaining.
So currently, the chair would be expected to vote under what we have currently.
Can choose to vote,
like so everybody else.
It's just like everyone else. When the chair calls for a vote, you have to vote, but you can say yes, no, or abstain.
Okay. So under the rules that, under just normal rules, then the chair is a voting member of this board. Would you like to modify the rules?
We can probably talk about that, but probably can't change it today.
Yeah, I think your discussion so far about that, because you're talking about picking a chair, has been fine. But if you do want to have a formal discussion about altering the rules of procedure, that probably should be agendized.
Okay.
And I would have to change the ordinance, because like Knapp City, they actually have it in their rules that we have in ours too.
So currently, the chair is just a normal voting member of this board. That's good to know. Thank you for that question. And if you decide you want that something different than that, then we would need to get it agendized, and then we could discuss it. Is that good with everybody?
What was Kanab City's ordinance right now? How do they have it set up, or most other counties? Do we know?
I thought there said that theirs could vote, or was it couldn't vote? It's been like over a year ago we had this discussion.
The Kanab City and a lot of cities where they have that similar form of government, where the mayor also acts as the chair of the city council. They're almost across the board. It's the same, where it's the mayor only votes to break a tie. And if you have a 5-member city council, that's very rare. Like, you have to have somebody absent, and then a 2-2, right? So, but it's up to you.
Rob, when I was on, that's loud. When I was on Kanab City Planning Commission, I was the chair for, I think, 1 year, and it was just the chair only voted to break a tie as well. It was the same on the Planning Commission as it was in the City Council.
And they did have it stated in their ordinance. So because Robert's rules don't say that, if we wanted to make it that way, we'd need to put it in our chapter on Planning Commission that they only voted in the chance of a tie, just so that it was clear. Because right now, we couldn't have held you guys to that, where the chair couldn't have voted because we didn't have it in our ordinance.
I'm going to recommend that we leave it so that the chair can vote, because the chair doesn't have any more authority here than anybody else. It's not like a mayor city council situation where the mayor is actually an executive of the organization. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to decline any nominations to be a chair. So whoever comes back as chair, I would like them to have the opportunity to vote if they want to.
I agree with that. Like the commissioners, they all 3 vote. They don't have anybody not get to vote. So I think it's a good idea that everybody gets to vote.
That is your question?
That does is, yeah, I guess the only reason I want to talk about it is so that whoever is chair knows that going into it, mm-hmm. and can work back to that. So my question to some of the discussion that's taken place so far is then, why do we have a chair? I mean, the lead discussion. But you are an executive. You are in a position of, you're higher than everybody else because you're a chair. You are an executive.
Now you tell me.
My my experience when I was the school board president, your main job is to conduct a meeting and keep orderly conduct. And as my experience, I was told I could vote or I could not vote, but to please keep it consistent. Either I was a voting chair or I was a not voting chair, not to pick and choose which items, you know, unless I formally abstained from it. So that's my
experience. I'm good either way. I just thought that whoever's being nominated, that might affect their decision on running or not, or being elected or not.
Well, for my part, because disallowing the vote would require a rule change, as of for right now at least, the chair, I think, is a voting member. Sometimes when we were doing this, I didn't vote because it would be like 4-0, and I'm thinking, what's the point, right? So let's go ahead and proceed under the rules that are current. Chair can vote. If you want to change it, then somebody needs to bring it up. But I don't think I'm seeing a sentiment to change that. Maybe you have one and I'm not reading it right.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'd like to nominate John Reese for chair.
I second.
We have a nomination, John Reese. Are there any other nominations?
I think Pat was vote. Weren't you trying to get yourself nominated?
Absolutely not.
In the absence of additional nominations, I would accept a motion for nominations closed. Unless somebody wants to make another nomination.
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion that we close the nominations.
Okay, second. So we have a motion to second to close nominations. That makes the vote easy. All in favor of John Reese, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say no. That's quite a mandate you've got here.
Yeah.
Nominations are now open for vice chair.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to nominate Gwen Brown as the vice chairman.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to nominate Gwen Brown as vice chair. Do I hear more nominations?
I move to close nominations.
We have a motion to close nominations. Is there a second to that motion?
Second.
We have a motion and a second to close nominations. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed, say no. Okay. Congratulations, John. Congratulations, Gwen. And that will happen after the meeting's over or now?
After you decide, though. You guys can decide.
You got it.
Okay. All right. Well, congratulations. This is going to be, I'm looking forward to another good year, and that's going to be great. Is there any unfinished business with regard to nominations, staff? Keep me on track here.
You're doing great.
Okay. Thank you. Commissioner Heaton is not here, so we'll dispense with item number 3. Did we approve the minutes?
Yes.
We did already. I thought we did. You know, it's good that you're going to be the chair, John. I'm losing track. Okay, and I think item number 4 has also been withdrawn from the agenda. Is that true?
Yes, I had Tom Avan call me at 11 o'clock this morning, and the applicants wanted to postpone it a month. They wanted to meet together as a family and see if they really wanted to go through with this after finding out how expensive it is to subdivide. So he asked that we postpone it for a month.
Very good.
So to do that, that makes it to where they wouldn't have to reapply. He asked that you would actually make a motion to postpone it to the February meeting.
Mr. Chair, can I move to postpone to the February meeting on agenda number 4?
Yes, you don't need my permission, though, to make a motion. So I assume that is a motion, not a question?
Yes.
Good. Okay. Do I hear a second?
I second.
We have a motion and a second to postpone the zone change ordinance 2024-1, Cannab 160 LLC, to the next meeting. Is there any discussion? Hearing no discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, say no. That motion passes as well. And now we're coming to Item number 5 is a temporary use permit for Western Rock. It's an application for a temporary use permit for a hot mix asphalt plant at the existing New Perea gravel pit located on parcel 2-1-33-6. Is Jeremy here? Can you come up to the microphone, please, and let us know what you want to do?
Good evening. Thank you for getting us on the agenda and letting us come and be a part of this process. Would you like me to summarize what we're doing, or would you guys just like to ask questions?
Quick summarize would be great.
Will do. The Utah Department of Transportation has awarded us a bid to pave from the Page state line to the Buckting Draw. It's an SMA asphalt, and it's about 40,000 tons. In order to facilitate that, we need to move our portable parallel flow asphalt production hot plant into the Perea aggregate site that we lease from Charlie Hepworth. And to do that would be, you know, short term. We're applying for 6 months. We don't anticipate the project to be anywhere near that. There is some rumblings of some other smaller projects that may come up, 10,000 tons, but it would fall within that 6 month timeline is what we anticipate. So, generally speaking, we put in just application with the parameters that are known, with the job that is known, and wanted to put that forward today for discussion.
Where is Buck Tank Draw?
That? Where's Buck Tank Draw?
It's a couple of miles away from where the high fence ends.
So quite a way. So is that closer to the Perea town site turnoff?
Yes.
So you're going to go all the way from there
to the state line.
To the state line.
Because the high fence is like the 37-mile marker, so that's a pretty good project.
No, it just goes to the 10 or the 11.
Okay. So where the that rock formation is?
Yeah.
Okay, because the high fence that I'm thinking of is the one that goes for 10 miles from the Buckskin Wash all the way
to... I'm pretty sure this project goes from the state line to the 10.
Okay.
10 miles is about what
it
is. I thought it was a little bit more miles than that. I don't know the miles. My world is tons. I apologize.
Yes, no
I can
worries.
Get you miles, though, if needed. So.
No worries.
My understanding, Buck Tank Draw, is where all those cars are always parked and those people are hiking up in. Is that what you are thinking?
They call it like the Three Sisters or something right there.
Yeah.
Just this side of Big Water.
To that new passing lane.
Correct, yeah.
May might be covering that.
Pretty sure that's going Buck Tank Draw.
Okay, you have any questions for the applicant?
Hours of operation?
Yeah, we've put in essentially from sunrise to sunset. We do have one small generator that is necessity to run in the off hours to keep the oil hot for the production for the next day. It's not a large generator, it's not loud, right? We see nothing obtrusive with that. And then Monday through Friday is what we anticipate, unless there's some type of scheduling bind, at which point we would look at necessity of weekend work. But as of right now, we do not see that or anticipate it. So Monday through Friday, sunrise to sunset, would be our operating hours.
So real quick on that, this is the second time that Western Rocks actually asked for a temporary use permit. And last time, the other one was through Big Water. If they need to change those hours, because it's an ordinance, they came in and amended their permit. And it was due to weather that they did have to come in and amend that. And so that is available. One thing to let you know that Western Rock's been really good to work with in the past. I don't see anybody from New Perea, but they actually, I had a few complaints about the generator and concerns. Being on all night, I actually went out there at 10:30 in the evening and listened. And Western Rock's done a fabulous job. They put a berm, and all I could hear was a hum. There would be no way you could hear that within a home. They were really good to work with. They made sure they put the flaggers up and the signs because there was some concerns about safety. And then they actually had somebody call the Department of Environmental Quality on the dust, and Western Rock passed. And so they've been really good and stayed within all of the conditions that are on this temporary use permit. And so, as you can see, I recommend approval because everything's in order. And working with them in the past, I just kind of kept the same conditions that I had the first time, and they were able to stay within those parameters very well.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Shannon mentioned the traffic plan, flaggers and stuff.
Yes.
Could you help me understand what that's going to look like? Because it's a two-lane road without a acceleration lane or anything like that.
Absolutely, yeah. In the past, ingress and egress out of that pit on that road has been a concern and will continue to be a concern. We have engaged Forte Engineering to do a traffic control plan that would line up with Utah Department of Transportation standards. It is not complete. I talked with him this afternoon. He expects it any day. But ultimately, what there would be is some signage in both directions, letting the public know, one, that there's trucks coming in and out and slow down. We've actually proposed the use, even though this would not be required and go above and beyond, proposed the use of message boards. Those tend to get a little bit more attention, convey more information. That's what we're looking to do in order to get the traveling public to be cautious in that area, understanding that the trucks will be coming in and out. A couple of things, if I can add to go in line with that. The trucking traffic will be limited in the sense that we're doing the aggregate mining on site. So we won't need to import aggregates and then add additional trucking to that. It would just be the haul of the asphalt to the project and then back. And then additionally, we tried to set the hot pipe back as far as we can on the property. It's about 2,000 feet from 89. It's not the 5,000 feet that would be required to exempt us from a lot of things, right? But it is a significant distance from really anything of residence or commercial.
So does that mean that you're going to be running a crusher to create the chips and stuff?
Yes, yes. Okay. Now, there is an existing crushing permit already in place that we would utilize for that. In fact, that's currently happening.
What's your projected start date?
For the crushing?
For the asphalt.
Oh, okay. So there's two components. There's a hot in place is what it's called. It's a fairly lengthy process where they take existing asphalt, recycle those, heat it up, and put it back in with oil. Our part, and we subcontract that out. The part that we're addressing here to utilize this hot plant, we would anticipate around May 1 would be a start, and we anticipate about 30 days of actual production.
Thank you. Any other questions?
I have one.
Yeah.
When I was reading through this afternoon, and I'm not suggesting that you wouldn't do it, but mitigations, all trash will be hauled to a disposal site on the second page, and then at the top of the third page, all trash, scrap metal, including wood, blah, blah, will be hauled to a land disposal site. Do we need to put in there unauthorized or something? Some kind of language that it's an authorized disposal site, just to be clear, is that in the ordinance?
If you want it in there, I can add it. You want to say unauthorized or an authorized?
It's authorized. It's mitigations. It's under the heading mitigations on the second page, and then item number 4 at the top of the third page. That's all.
So currently we have a dumpster on site that would be dumped regularly. It would be taken back to the, what they would do is they'd just do a swap, and then any refuse would be taken back to the Washington County landfill and then gone from there. So we'll manage our trash.
Okay. Great.
Any more questions?
Mr. Chairman, I move to approve the temporary use permit for Western Rock and application for a temporary use permit for hot mix plant at the existing new pre-gravel pit located on parcel 2-1-33-6.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion on the motion? All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed say no. Motion passes.
Thank you. Look forward to getting you guys a new road and be good neighbors. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you. Item number 6 on the agenda is a open and meetings training. I think we turn the time over to Rob.
We did it through the app. So we probably just need to quit sharing our screen. You want to just put on, go to your app?
I'll do that too.
Stop presenting. And then the code changes each time, so you'll need the new code, 7397.
Bless you. I'm going to have you sign that, and then you don't have to worry about it after the meeting. How's that?
Great. If you'll warm, you've got me set up here.
Jen,
I signed that. Thank you. The house changes every time. I learned that
the hard way. You'll
fill the date in for me, won't you?
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Doug, you had two sets of minutes to sign.
I've got some here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you sign them? Or
I haven't yet.
Gwen, you gave me. Okay.
Yeah, I signed them.
I thought this came from you. Sorry, I got them spread around too many people.
You do need me to sign these or no?
I do need you to sign all of that.
Thank you. Okay. Rob, if you want to...
We're working on getting connected. We got new systems we're working on.
Okay, there we go. Okay, this is your annual Open and Public Meetings Act training. You are required to take it every year, regardless of whether you've done it 50 times or two times. So we'll try to make this as painless as possible, but please ask questions. Is it okay if I sit here? Do you guys want me to move somewhere else?
You're fine.
Do that, or you can do whatever you're most comfortable with. Do you want to be here where you can see them?
Okay. Yeah, I'll sit there.
Let's walk in places.
Okay, so just an overview of the Open Public Meetings Act. The way I view it, there's three pillars of the act. You first start off with having adequate and proper notice for your meetings. Let's see, did I miss something? Okay. Second, you have open a public process for your meetings, and then you follow up third with open records. So that's what we're going to talk about, and then we'll talk about public policy, who must comply, what's a meeting, enforcement, etc. So public policy on the act is, you know, the overarching purpose is to aid in the conduct of the people's business, right? That's what you guys are engaged in here, is the people's business. And in order to do that, in order to aid in conducting the people's business, you are required to take your actions openly and conduct your deliberations openly. Some states are deliberation states and some are not. Utah is a deliberation state. So other states, this is, and almost every state has gone away from this, but there are a couple left that they can deliberate and for anything in private and only take their actions openly. So there's the three pillars. I kind of went over that already. So we'll talk about those in order. So noticing your meetings is pretty important ahead of time so the public can be aware. You do one annual notice of all of the dates of your regular meetings at the beginning of the year. And then in advance of each meeting, you have a 24-hour notice. And for each meeting, notice has to be sent to a local general, to a local media correspondent. They make that pretty easy to do when Wendy posts the agendas on the public notice website, which is another requirement. It just has a box that she can put that email in and easily send it to our local paper, just giving notice of the meeting to them. You have to have written notice here at the county building. And then your notices have to have the agenda with all items stated with reasonable specificity. And then has to have the date, time, and place, obviously. So reasonable specificity is probably the thing that you'll be most concerned about on your agendas. I guess it's not too tricky for this body. Because it lists, you know, Shannon very clearly lists, you know, somebody's applying for a conditional use permit, and so that's clearly specific to that item. that you could get into some tricky situations where, like, you're looking at an ordinance change and you've noticed to change a specific chapter or a specific topic, and as part of that discussion, now you want to talk about something that's kind of outside the scope of that chapter or that specific topic. If it's within the reasonable specificity of your notice, you can. But if it's not, then you're not properly noticed for that item and you need to wait until a subsequent meeting. You can have emergency meetings. It's hard to imagine where this board would have the need to do an emergency meeting. So I won't really go over that part. So once you have adequate notice, then you can hold your meeting and have an open public process, that second pillar. And you start off by saying that all meetings are open to the public. You can close your meetings. It's always discretionary. For this board, it's always discretionary if you go into closed meetings. So you're not required to. If you're allowed to go into closed, you're not required to. You do have to have a two-thirds majority vote and state the specific reason why you're going into closed session. And there's only a number of specific purposes to go into closed session. I've listed here just the ones that normally apply to, like, county or city groups that have to comply.
Well,
yeah.
If you're going to go into closed session, doesn't that have to be on the agenda, though? You can't just randomly go into closed session, can you?
No, you can. For anything that's on the agenda, if there's a need and a specific purpose, you can go into closed session just by the vote.
Okay.
A lot of times entities, when they know or at least feel like ahead of time it will be a closed session, they will put it on their agenda that it's closed session. But even under those circumstances, you still have to have a two-thirds vote.
Okay.
Okay, so if you do go into closed session, you can't take any final action. Your minutes have to be clear about the reason for going into closed session, and you have to keep a recording. You can do an affidavit for closed sessions, but that's only allowed under that first exception for what we typically refer to as the personnel. So when you're talking about an individual's character, professional competence, or physical or mental health. Any questions about closed meetings? Okay. So then after we have the meeting, the third pillar is your open records. So mainly that's done through minutes and recordings. So with your minutes, you have to have pending or draft minutes, and they have to be available within a reasonable time. Approved minutes have to be available within 3 days of being approved. You have to have an official process to approve minutes. Yours is pretty simple. You just have it on a subsequent agenda and vote to approve the minutes. And minutes, including draft minutes or pending minutes, are subject to grandma. So anyone from the public can view them, can request them. Recordings, a complete recording of the meeting has to be available within 3 days. And it is also subject to grandma unless it's a closed portion of a meeting. So your minutes, a little bit more detail. They have to have this level of detail: the date, time, place in the meeting, the names of all members present or absent, all the matters that were proposed, discussed, or decided. Typically that's done just by having your agenda items as listed on the agenda. In your minutes. It has to have all names and substance of information from individuals giving testimony. So, like, if you have a public hearing, that's why Wendy is always asking people to state their name, because it does have to list their name in the minutes. Individual votes on each matter have to be listed. So sometimes this is the reason why people say that you do a roll call vote, that it's required. Technically, roll call votes are not required, but with a body of this size, particularly if you're not going to have a unanimous vote on an issue, roll call is the best way to make sure that your individual vote can be recorded and placed on the minutes appropriately. The minutes also have to include any additional information requested by any member. So if you want something in the minutes, then you're entitled to have it in the minutes. Minutes of close, you do also have to have minutes for your closed sessions if you have one. But the requirements are a little bit less. You don't put as much detail in there. Okay, so really any governmental or quasi-governmental agency has to comply with the Open Meetings Act. That includes you. If for some reason you set up a subcommittee or a standing committee, they would have to comply if it was established by like a rule or ordinance or resolution. But if it's just like an ad hoc thing, that there's nothing formal behind it, then they wouldn't have to comply. So what's a meeting? This is kind of important because this is what actually triggers all of these requirements. It has to be a meeting. So all of these have to be present in order for it to be a meeting. So you have to convene a public body. You're obviously a public body and you're convened today. You have to have a quorum present. So that's a majority of your board. It includes any type of workshop or executive session. Sometimes organizations get tripped up and they think, oh, well, this is just a work session. This is just a work meeting. It's different than a regular meeting. Anything, it doesn't matter what it is. If all these other things apply, it's a meeting and you have to comply with the Open Meetings Act. It doesn't matter whether the meeting is held in person or by means of electronic communications. That becomes important when we're talking about emails. We'll discuss that later on. And then the purpose of your meeting has to be to discuss, receive comments from the public about, or act upon any matter, right? So you're either deliberating or taking action, or the third thing is receiving comments from the public, right? Gathering information. But it has to be something that you have jurisdiction or advisory power over. There are several bills already filed this year for the upcoming legislative session that are going to change, that want to change this pretty drastically. It's unclear why, but we're probably going to have something's going to pass, and there's probably going to be some changes to how we look at this portion of the Open Meetings Act. So there's things that are clearly not a meeting, and you know, like a chance meeting, social meetings, right? So if you guys all went to the same church, that's fine. You don't have to bring Shannon with you to record it, right? Obviously, those kind of things are okay. In the past, they specifically had to put this legislation in there because there were some officials and some officials who were attacked for just being together for other purposes that didn't have anything to do with taking official action or deliberating or taking public comment.
I like this idea.
What's that?
You know, I'll go to Escobar's.
Let's do it. Yeah. Okay, so you can have electronic meetings. You're allowed to do that by phone, computer, or other electronic means. So that's pretty broad. You have to have a written policy. You still have to have all the same notice and record requirements apply for any electronic meeting. You have to at least have a public location for the public to attend. So that's you know, your most common way of doing that is sometimes somebody will call in from your board, somebody will call in to participate on the phone as a board member. But for if you had a meeting that was 100% online, you would still be required to have a physical location where the public could attend to listen in. They did put it, some things in for pandemic issues or other types of public safety issues that you can say that there shouldn't be a public location to attend because of those concerns. So other electronic means that you can form a meeting just by emailing each other if you satisfy all the other requirements. So if you're discussing, deliberating on a matter over which you have advisory power or jurisdiction, and you form a quorum, then you've formed a meeting. But what you haven't done is complied with the notice and record requirements of the Act, right?
So a group text or a group email.
So when I email, you never reply all. When I send you out minutes or something like that, don't ever do a reply all.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, technically, like if you have a question about something, like that's not deliberating, but it invites deliberation. Yes,
it keeps
right?
you out of trouble.
It's perfectly fine for you to communicate with staff, and it's perfectly fine for you to communicate with each other as long as you don't form a quorum. A lot of people talk about, well, if it's one person that talks to one person that then talks to one person, or you have groups of three, well, and now by the time you get to the meeting, you've really deliberated the whole item. Yes, that in spirit, that violates the Act, and probably you should draw some public ire if that's the way you're handling business, but it's not prohibited by the Act. You've at no point did you establish a quorum under those circumstances. But it is pretty easy to do that because email is so accessible. Okay, so there are some enforcement provisions. So we'll talk about the most common violations. So the most common things are about closed meetings, and it's so difficult for people to, I don't know why, but it's so difficult for people to remember that when you vote to go into a closed session, you have to, first of all, you have to actually have a vote. Your chair can't just call you into closed session. You have to have a two-thirds majority vote. Your motion has to state the reason why you're going in. And so people will, like if you've noticed it on the agenda, it's like, oh, well, everybody knows we're going in closed session, so now it's time for closed session. Well, you still have to vote, right? So that's a pretty common violation. Or closing the meeting for unauthorized purposes. That's when cases go to court, that's the case law that I've seen. That is the most common reason. Boards have something that's very controversial, very uncomfortable to talk about with the public, or you know they have their real opinion about something that they don't necessarily want to share, and so they go into closed session about it. And if there isn't a specific statutory reason, they're not allowed to do that. Another thing is, you know, when you do go into closed session, you can have all the deliberation you want, but you can't take that final action. You have to wait until you come out of closed session. So that's a common violation. And then the other two are about notices. So not having proper notice. Maybe you missed the 24-hour deadline. Maybe you don't have reasonable specificity on an item and you're outside the scope of that. But inadequate notice is another common violation. Okay, so how is it enforced? It can be enforced criminally. A knowing and intentional violation, or it even applies to me, if I advise a violation, this really only applies to closed meetings. So if you knowingly and intentionally violate closed meeting provisions, it is a Class B misdemeanor, so that can be prosecuted criminally. But the most common way is civil enforcement. So courts can undo any action that you take that's in violation of the Open Publics Meeting Act. But it is pretty easy to cure violations. You can just hold another meeting that's properly noticed, go through the deliberation again, take the vote again at a proper meeting. But if the county is sued, there's a provision that requires us to pay court costs and attorney's fees, so it can be a costly violation. So who gets to enforce the act? Obviously the courts through civil proceedings. The attorney general and all county attorneys are entrusted with the enforcement of the act, but any aggrieved party, so private citizens, can file lawsuits to enforce Open Meetings Act violations.
I have to interrupt you. I like that you found a picture with a pitchfork in it, just saying.
Yeah. Those are the aggrieved parties. Okay, so for any civil action, it is a pretty quick thing that somebody has to file a civil action within 90 days of the meeting. For things that, when it's related to money, so issuing bonds or debt, it's a really short timeline of 30 days. Criminal prosecution can be filed any time within 2 years. Anybody notice John Travolta? What was that movie with John Travolta? A civil action? Okay, so that's there's a couple extra things that are not necessarily within the Open Meetings Act, but they kind of apply, that are specific to planning commission. So I put these in. So most of you have been here long enough to understand that you wear two different hats as the planning commission. You're an administrative decision-making body, so that's like a quasi-judicial function. You're acting like a judge where you, somebody comes to you, you take the facts, you apply the facts to the law and make a decision. And then your other hat is taking legislative actions, acting like a legislative body. And there are two very different functions. And under the administrative decision-making function, there's an extra reason to close meetings, and it's called administrative decision making. This is something that's judicially created. There's a couple of lawsuits that went before the court, and where bodies were doing administrative decision making and went into closed session, and the courts were like, "Hey, well, this is kind of like us. We're judges, and we get to deliberate privately. We're even protected to have that ability, even when it's, you know, like a three-judge panel or, you know, your five-member Supreme Court in the state of Utah. You know, we're protected, so what's the difference with these types of quasi-judicial bodies? They should also have some protection." So they created this exception. It's called administrative decision-making. How it works is when you're doing the fact-gathering portion of your action, that has to be done publicly. And then when you're done gathering the facts and it's time for you to deliberate, that's the point where you're allowed to go into closed session. I think you've used that one time in the almost 15 years that I've been here. But it is an option for you. The other part of that responsibility is ex parte communication. So just like a judge has to go through the appropriate channels, official procedures to gather information, to ask questions, you, when you're acting in a quasi-judicial function, have that same obligation. So when you go outside of those formal official channels to either gather information or talk to applicants, that's called ex parte actions or ex parte communication. So if you're in a situation, right, where maybe there's a conditional use permit, you see it on the agenda, and you know Shannon and Wendy have provided information in the packet and you've reviewed that, but maybe you still have questions. So you think, oh, I'm just gonna go ask the applicant real quick, because they would just know and they'd just be really easy for them to tell me. You can't do that. That's ex parte communication. You could do that in the meeting, right? You can also ask your staff to go out and collect information ahead of the meeting. So you can email Shannon and say, hey, I've got this question. Could you go get some more information? then Shannon can officially gather that information, officially put it in their her packet, officially provide it to all of the Planning Commission members. So that's done in a more public way, right? So all that information is now public information instead of just ex parte information that's just in your own head, right? So on the administrative decision making, the quasi-judicial side, you got to steer away from that type of thing. Now, so on the legislative side, right? So all of the normal rules for closed sessions apply. If you want to go into a closed session, it has to be for one of those statutorily listed reasons, and there's nothing extra for you on that side. But you also have more freedom to gather information because it's legislation, right? So this is zone changes, and anytime that you have an item on your agenda to create a new ordinance or to change an ordinance that we have, or the general plan, that's also legislative. So those items, it's, you know, you're going to be making recommendations to the county commission for what they should do to create or change the law. So these legislative actions, you can, you know, and there's, you can see there's that big difference, right? On the administrative side, you don't have a lot of discretion. You look at what the law is, you apply the facts to the law. On the legislative side, you're creating the law, and you, it's wide open. Your bounds are the Constitution, right? You have to stay within the bounds of the Constitution, and as you know, further restricted by state law sometimes. So if you want to get more information, like on a zone change, technically you can go out and talk to the applicant of the zone change on your own. That's not something that we would necessarily recommend that you do. That type of a thing, it probably would still be better to go through staff, and they can gather the information and present it to everyone. But that's not a violation. You can, and somebody that wants to do, you know, they've got 1,000 acres of ag and they want to make it R1, you can go out and talk to them if you want in advance of the meeting. There's nothing that prohibits that. That's you exercising your ability to act like a legislator and gather information. Okay, so these ones are probably the most tricky for this board. Are there any questions on this item? If you ever have questions about it, if something comes up and you're not sure, please just ask me. I would much rather give you that information ahead of time and instead of having to correct you afterwards, right? It happens every now and then, but I'm very accessible, email, text, whatever. So please feel free to communicate with me ahead of time. Okay, that's it. Unless we have questions.
Mr. Chair?
Move to adjourn.
Move to adjourn.
Second. Apparently, we have a motion to adjourn. It's not debatable. All in favor say aye.
Meeting adjourned at 6:55.